This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Michael, you into Grandma Pie?
No.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
It's in Pompano Beach.
Mom!
Tom Thibo Diaw.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to ENN. On this, a Tuesday evening, the night of Game 2 of your New York Yankees against the Tampa Bay Rays, which you can hear right here. I don't know if you guys know that. On 98.7 ESPN, our very own Dan Shulman on the call.
He's good.
Very good. And also ENN tonight is sponsored by Coors Seltzer. Coors Seltzer makes volunteering easy. Let's say you drink a seltzer while you're watching the game. That's volunteering. Each 12-pack sold will help restore 500 gallons of river water. Drink a seltzer, help save the Hudson River. Details at CoorsSeltzer.com. And we'll start off by saying good evening to Michael.
I just feel like doing a thirst trap.
Perfect. And I'd also like to say, if possible, good evening to Don.
Yeah, I used to love to go head first.
It's my motto.
And we know it, Don. Sure is. In everything. Everything when it comes to you is head first. Buffalo chicken. Yep. Doritos. Hockey. You know? Other
head
things.
Head first.
Yeah, head first kind of guy.
Anything worth doing is worth doing head first.
It's a great point. Guys, the Giants are not playing good football. You may be aware of that. You may or may not be aware of that. But now, they're getting it from their own. You guys remember OCU Mignora?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Yeah,
very good
him.
Guy.
Yeah, he was a part of, I believe, 2 Super Bowls.
Oh, sure.
Giants, right? Well, here's some words from OCU Mignora. It's sad. It's unfortunate to hear these things, but it must be said. He said, I look at the Giants, I think the same way I look at America. I look at the Giants with a lot of fond memories, but then I'm like, what the hell happened? It's some absolute craziness going on there right now. To think that in the past 8 seasons, they've had 1 winning record, I think. It just doesn't make any sense for a team with that kind of pride and with that kind of history. And with what we did, what we had done in the 8 years prior to that, it's really unfortunate, man. But in some form or fashion, they have almost lost their way. They've lost their identity. Like, what is the New York Giants' identity right now? I couldn't even tell you what it is. Got to tell you guys, a lot of times when you hear former players kind of weigh in, they don't get it. And it doesn't make sense. I feel like he sort of hit the nail on the head for how most fans feel, no?
Well, I think 100%. So, but the one thing that I would argue with about it, you know, it's not the Giant way. I mean, bad things have happened to great organizations. The Yankees are the winningest organization in sports. And from 1965 to like 1969 or 70, they were terrible. They were finishing last place. The bottom fell out. So what you did in the past means nothing if you don't continue to replenish and do things the right way. So the Giants have done everything wrong over the last 8 years. Everything. And they deserve to lose.
And I have all the respect in the world for the Mara family. I do. I think they're great owners, and Wellington was a great owner. But you know, people have short memories or just aren't old enough to remember. You know, this is not the first time the Giants lost their way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go back, to they went to 3 straight championship games in 61, 62, and 63. Did not make the playoffs again until 81. Fans burning season tickets, flying planes over the stadium. You know, nobody was talking about the Giant way then.
Well, that's a bad run.
You know, and they lost their way. And then the league had to step in, Peter.
Yep.
Pete Rozelle had to step in because Tim and Wellington were fighting with each other and say, listen, there's a guy by the name of George Young. You should hire him as your general manager. In 1979, they did that. And then the Giants way all of a sudden came back. And then that produced Ernie Accorsi. The Giant way is when they when they pick the right people, it's the Giant way. When they pick the wrong people, it gets away from them. That's ownership in a nutshell, right? Yeah. You know what a great owner is? A great owner is when they hire the right people. And when they hire the wrong people, all of a sudden they're not great owners anymore. If Jim Dolan hired the right people for the Knicks, he'd be a great owner. He hasn't, so he's a bad owner. George Steinbrenner, Michael, you remember, great owner. He bought the great owner. And then all of a sudden he started, got too involved, hired the wrong people, and all of a sudden, you know what, bad owner. Then he became a great owner again.
So true.
Because you hire the right people.
You are as good
people,
an owner as your last hire is productive.
And the Giants have gotten it wrong since Ernie left. And I wish Ernie would talk about it, but he's too dignified a guy, I think, to really get too deep into it. But I wonder if he's got some answers on, like, what exactly happened with Jerry Reese. And maybe it was just a case of, hey, we think we can squeeze one more out. And they were wrong, and they set themselves back. But they've just hired
the wrong
people.
I think it all went off the rails when they benched Eli for Geno Smith. Then all of a sudden, the Maras and the Tishes had extreme guilt pangs, tried to make it up. And they just buried themselves further.
But it's not like things had been great prior to that.
Oh, but if we're
honest with ourselves.
But Michael's right. I mean, they were coming off an 11-5 season. And so you figured, all right, 2017, let's see where this goes. It wasn't going anywhere. Whether John recommended it, whether it was somebody else that recommended it, said, all right, maybe it's time to take a look at the kids. And it was a PR disaster, because I really believe, Peter, we were there that day. No one was shocked when we heard Eli was getting benched. It wasn't that crazy a thought. You know what the crazy thought was? Benching him for Geno Smith.
Yep.
Yeah, if Davis Webb was the guy, it would not have been the PR disaster that it would have been, even if it fell on his face.
I always felt very strongly about that. The key was it being Geno in particular, who everyone in New York felt they knew everything they needed to know.
Right, because he failed with the Jets, and at least Davis Webb was their draft pick. Let's see what he can do.
Well, and no one knew anything about Davis Webb. We never got a look at him. I still couldn't tell you what Davis Webb looks like throwing a football. Let's get to last night a little bit. What ended up being a doubleheader of Monday Night Football, CBS had the Chiefs and the Patriots, and one storyline of the Patriots game was the return of James White, who lost his father. His parents were in a car accident a couple of weeks ago, and he lost his father in that accident, and he gave an emotional statement after the game. Here's the Patriots' James White on the impact his father had on his life.
He meant a whole lot. He's one of the biggest reasons why I play football. Being a little kid, seeing my brother play, knowing that my dad played football, kind of motivated me to go out there and play football. My dad, he was a coach for me growing up. And obviously, it was not always fun having your dad be your coach, but he pushed me, made me who I am today. I miss getting those, that text that he would usually send me on Saturday nights, before games. Just simple text he was sent to get me prepared for the games and stuff. I kind of looked back at the last text that I got the Saturday before the Seahawks game, just to kind of reminisce on that. But he meant everything for me. He pushed me. He wouldn't always tell me what I wanted to hear, but he just always wanted me to do the right thing and push myself to be the best I could be.
Tell you what, man. These guys, they put some serious emotional stuff right behind them to get back out there on the field and perform. And you feel for a guy like James White, who's already back out there. And clearly this is a time when any people in a normal field would really be struggling to perform on that sort of level. But this is what these guys do.
I don't know how you do it. Remember Brett Favre, the great performance he had after losing his dad.
Mm-hmm.
The way you do it is that when you get between the lines, you forget about it. You try, you have to concentrate just in order to perform, and that becomes a 3 or 4 hour respite.
Sad stuff. Let's talk about the other game last night where the Packers got me, guys. Just a huge win. I mean, I don't pick up those 3 points listen, nothing's over 4 weeks in. But, you know, Jar from Oz, you know, said it best. I mean, this was potentially a season-saving moment for me. But there are other reasons, I suppose, to be interested in the game besides my picks. By the way, if you're keeping track with what's happening here, Michael had an unbelievable week. He nails the Bills pick, the Saints and the Chargers. Don, it was one of those weeks. I know it's a crapshoot, but given Michael's history, and I don't know if it crossed your mind, you know, you're a more positive guy, so you'll probably say no. It was one of those weeks where it crossed my mind that he's getting fed picks.
I will tell you this right now. This will shock both of you. I have my three picks already for Sunday.
See, Don, there's something going on.
No, there's picks that are jumping out of me, and I'm the best at this.
Well,
I went through that last year. Listen, I carried that torch last year, but hey, if he is, you know what? Maybe I got to find somebody to help out too. Maybe you, certainly. But
great point. Well,
but even if he's getting help, you hear from the great RJ Bell.
And he took RJ's pick, that Chargers pick.
He's 5% better than average. So it's still a crapshoot.
So, but by the way, I thought I picked with RJ. RJ didn't pick the Texans?
No.
He made one pick. And actually, according to Jar Famaz, he ended up getting a push because we add the extra half a point for the home team so we don't have pushes.
Yeah, but he liked it on Thursday. It was 7.5 on Thursday. So
okay, because it ended up being 7 at kickoff.
Right.
And that was dicey, too, even though it was a big blowout early where it looked like it was pretty comfortable it was going to be the Chargers. There could have been a backdoor cover there. There could have been a backdoor cover for the Falcons last night. They had the ball late. They could have scored a meaningless touchdown and made 0-3.
Oh, Don, absolutely. And as it stands now, Michael going 3-for-3 this week. 17 points, an impressive 8-4 overall. Don goes 1-for-3 on the week. He's got a better record than Michael, 9-3. But that point allocation, Michael's up 17-16. And then thanks to the three-pointer, my second three-pointer in a row, I am only 3-9. It's awful. And it's a miracle that I have 8 points because this could be just even worse. I at least have a fighting chance to get back in it, but it's an ugly start. But let's hear from Aaron Rodgers, who does a weekly spot on Pat McAfee's show and spoke a little bit this week about his comfort in the offense with LaFleur and also drops a subtle flex.
Do you think being a second year in your offense that you're currently in with LaFleur is a massive advantage to maybe what was happening last year?
Look, I mean, I don't know. Every team is different. Every year is different. And, you know, circumstances in any year which allow you to have more success or make it more difficult for success just kind of depends on the situation. It does help being a second year, for sure. I feel a lot more comfortable. But I sometimes laugh when people talk about, you know, down years for me, because a lot of times down years for me are career years for most quarterbacks. Yeah!
That's a thirst trap right there.
Not a thirst trap. That's not. That worries me. If you think that's a thirst trap, then I'm worried about what you're trying to do tonight.
I just feel like doing a thirst trap.
Because that's not what that was. But
did you hear the big news about Keith Olbermann?
No.
No.
That he just sent out? He is leaving ESPN early from his because in order to come back to ESPN this time, ESPN, according to Keith, said that they had said that they have a desire for their sportscasters to refrain from purely political commentary. I know that Keith has been, like, bubbling to make his opinions known about the political climate of the country. So he has asked ESPN to release him from his contract a little bit early, and he's going to be doing political commentary from now on.
I'm very confused about what's going on in Keith's head.
Why?
Isn't this why he left all of that and came back to ESPN?
Yeah, I think he just feels the need to say it.
Yeah, I think he...
This timing doesn't make sense.
I think
it makes
he
perfect
felt...
sense. The election's coming up.
Yeah, but it's 30 days. And then if it goes the way Keith hopes it goes, I will never reveal how I hope it goes. But if it goes the way Keith hopes it goes, is he really going to be desperate to talk politics all the time? You
I think
says
the politics, Peter, I think it has a nice long run of being somewhat contentious.
Contentious for sure, but like if he feels that right now his voice is absolutely needed, it may not feel as needed in a month. Don, you see what I'm saying?
He's doing it.
I just knowing Keith, I don't know him well, but I see him at Ranger games and we talk. That he was deep into it. He got very uncomfortable. I think he missed sports and he just wanted to take a break. But now it's popping so much and he's got so much opinion on it, probably way more than he would have on sports.
I bet he twitches at night over his opinions not being heard.
And it's just an itch he probably feels a need to scratch. And he has the talent and the ability to be able to change on the fly like that. So more power to him.
No, you're right. That's fair. I just feel like it was already during this administration that he left to get away from it and go to sports. But
right. And now he's been away from
it. I would recommend staying in sports, Keith. Keith, as someone who you don't know from Adam and don't even care for or respect my opinion.
He really doesn't. That's what I've heard.
Stay in sports. But because in politics, all people do is shout towards the people who already agree with you. There is no use. You cannot do anything to change a mind.
I got to tell you what, though. I'm going to get very deep here.
Please get deep.
I love what I do for a living. But sometimes I wonder, am I helping the world? Am I changing the world? Am I doing things that will have an impact long term?
No.
And I'm not.
Absolutely.
And then
not.
We get these lovely, glorious phone calls that say, you know, you are serving a purpose. You know, you're taking people's minds off terrible things that are happening. But still, I understand what Keith is saying. We are in the toy store. Sometimes you want to get into the more serious part. I've thought it over and over, and I don't think I'm qualified. But you do wonder, are you doing anything serious?
But I'm surprised Keith couldn't have worked out a deal where he did a podcast where he was able to do his stuff.
I don't think ESPN wanted to be attached to that kind of political commentary.
Because my thought is this, unless he's, I don't know where he could go, where he would reach people where they would go, wow, I never thought about it that way. Like, if he wants to affect the world, Keith could be just as effective being a sportscaster as beloved, who when he meets people on the street, tells them his opinion. Because when you go to work for MSNBC or Fox News or CNN, you are literally just in an echo chamber of people who feel the same way you do.
No,
I don't watch
saying.
Those channels.
You're not in this world. You're not changing anybody's mind,
no.
One way or the other. But he wants his opinion out. That's up to him. He probably has enough money, so he wants to do what he wants to do. Leave him alone.
Oh, listen. He and guess
he's
what I want to do.
He's a brilliant guy, whether you agree with him or not.
And so I want to do what I want to do, which is giving unsolicited advice to someone who's more successful than me, and that's what I'm doing.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, the Yankees are playing, Michael, in an hour and a half, okay?
I know.
And the youngster.
And you haven't mentioned them yet on ENN. Very strange.
No, that's not true.
Yeah.
I said it right at the top of ENN. Less than 2 hours away, right here on ESPN with Dan Schulman on the call.
That's okay. A
Don, did I not do that?
Statement.
God. The youngster, Davey Garcia, on the hill. And here's Aaron Boone, his advice for Garcia.
Go be himself. You know, go pitch, go enjoy the competition like I know he will. I think it's fun to watch guys in different ways really embrace competition. I think that's one thing that stood out for me with Davey is he likes to compete, and looking forward to seeing him go out and do that.
Let's hear from Jeff Passan, who was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning.
Second best guest we have.
About whether or not the Yankees can keep up this ridiculous offensive pace.
I'm seeing the Yankees team that at the beginning of the year, everyone thought they could be. And they showed flashes of it here and there during the regular season. You know, there were moments where they hit 19 home runs over three games, and you're like, oh my God, how is it? Anyone going to be able to stop these guys? But there were also moments that they absolutely disappeared. And perhaps it's just me being professionally skeptical, but I'm wondering when the Yankees are going to disappear. Not if. I feel like a team like this, it's difficult to stay hot over a sustained period of time. Now, if they do, guys, you know what we're looking at? We're looking at World Series champions.
Yeah. That's very well said.
It is well said because it's not to pour cold water on this, but it's almost impossible to hit like this over a long stretch of time. And he's right. They went 16-6. They went 10-0. But they also went 5-15. They went 2-6. So, I mean, it's the sort of thing that could come and go. But the thing that would make you optimistic is that it's been against great pitchers.
Yeah.
Like when they had those 19 home runs against the Blue Jays, the Blue Jays, they're not a playoff team this year. They got in because of the new format. They're just not. The Yankees beat them up.
Yeah. And listen, Michael, we don't know. If they played 162 games, the Yankees may have won the division by 10, and the Rays would have been a wild card team that could be eliminated before they even played the Yankees. I mean, we don't know. I think the Yankees are a better team. Now, that didn't play out in the 60-game schedule, especially when they faced off against each other. But I hearken back to that Astros series last year. Yankees won game one 7-0. They beat up Granky bad. And then they lost the next three games, scoring combined 6 runs. They scored more runs in game.
Those next games were against Verlander and Cole, right?
Yeah, but the point
is a big difference than Greinke.
All right, but there were three games, and I forget who pitched, or maybe it came back. I don't know if Greinke pitched game 4. I'd have to go see.
He must have.
But the point is that it can come and go. We've seen it happen with this team. This team goes 16-6, then they're 5-15, then they're 10-0, and then they're 2-8 to close out the season. Like so, or 2-6 to close out the season. So, Passan's right, you know. And this, and we've said it many times. Turn around and have it go away for 3-4 games. Your season's over. And they won game one last year against the Astros, lost the series. They won game one against the Red Sox in the best of 5 in 2018 and lost the next 3 straight. So there's still a lot of work to be done. You got to feel good, but you got to keep doing it.
I've got huge news for tomorrow. Huge news.
Really?
Yep. Some might call him the top guest. Some might call him the second best guest. Jeff Passan joins us tomorrow at 5. 5 o'clock, Passan.
Wow. Passan Wednesdays.
We almost have to, Michael, at some point.
Get them on together.
Get them on. No, no, not together.
Back to back.
Back to back where you can
belly
really
to belly
evaluate. And I think that's possible because we're going to have Mondays here where there's going to be a big Yankee weekend to recap and then a big football weekend to recap. So maybe we can have.
Can't have them back to back. Impossible.
Well, maybe you can.
Because you got Young at 5. You got Darnold at 5:30. Can't have them back to back.
All right. Well, unless
maybe
you
Passan 4:30.
There you go. Now you're thinking.
But I think the lead dog should be the lead dog. That's Steve Young.
Well, we will get right back to the Yankees and take calls as soon as ENN is over. But I want to close ENN, but Don, by saying farewell to Eddie Van Halen, who passed away after a long battle with cancer at 65 years old. His son posted, I can't believe I'm having to write this, but my father, Edward Ludwig Van Halen, lost his long and arduous battle with cancer this morning. He was the best father I could ever ask for. Every moment I've shared with him on and off stage was a gift. My heart is broken, and I don't think I'll ever fully recover from this loss. Sammy Hagar added, heartbroken and speechless. My love to the family. Widely regarded as maybe the greatest modern rock guitarist of all time.
He
was 65 years old.
He was one of the best, if not the best, guitar players of all time. His son Wolfgang was in the band for a while, replacing Michael Anthony, the bass player. And that was the son that he had with Valerie Bertinelli.
Mm.
And so the fact that he got to play with his dad and his uncle, because Eddie's brother Alex was the drummer. And just an incredible band, an incredible legacy, and pretty shocking, for sure. And as you said, Peter, earlier, he transcended just like rock because he was on Beat It, you know, recruited by Michael Jackson to play on that song. So that really just broke it out to where just superstar status, superstar.
Oh yeah, I mean,
status
he was the definition. Even if you didn't like me, you don't know anything about guitarists or a lot about hard rock. You know that Eddie Van Halen was the definition of incredible guitarist. That'll do it for ENN on this Tuesday evening.
I just got a text from the Yankees' brilliant director on Yes, John Moore. I'd love for you to meet him one day, John.
I'd like to meet him. Don.
He said, it's not fair to the audience to pack a show that full. Passan, Darnold, and Young in one show, it's just too much.
Wow. Well, you know what? If this were to happen in a few weeks, and at that point the Jets would be like 0-7, maybe we just give Sam the week off.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.